This meeting is now being recorded.
Thank you. So just before we launch into the agenda, I wanted folks to know that I have invited Jennifer Chung from the ICG Secretariat to join us today, since we have an agenda item that is relevant to her potentially. Anybody object to Jennifer joining us for the call today? Okay, thanks. I think it'll be helpful to have her here. So I just sent an agenda a few minutes ago. Obviously, we're all working around the clock here. I know there's been a bunch of work over the last few days, primarily amongst the legal teams, but we have received circulated versions of the community agreement as well, which is excellent. So why don't we get right started with a status update from whichever one of the lawyers would like to provide a status update. Go ahead.
Well, this is George. Sam and Josh, if you're on, I just gave a status update to our team, so I can just repeat that status update for the lawyer, which is that the legal group has been working since our call on Friday to get the three agreements, the community, the license, and the assignment agreement into final form. And I think we're quite close on all three agreements. There will be some holes and so forth that we need to discuss today, but by and large, I think we've made really good progress. And, there aren't at this point, at least in my view, any significant legal obstacles to the agreements. I think it's a matter of just getting the language to say what we all think it ought to say. And my expectation or hope is that at least by the end of today, we should be able to have drafts of all three agreements out for the communities to look at and review. There's a list of specific questions that I think we could use input from the business negotiating teams on, but I'll let Josh or Sam add anything on sort of the general overview that they'd like.
This is Sam from ICANN. George, I think that's a pretty fair representation of what's going on. I agree we're actually very close. I think there are some places that even if we're not able to get to exact language by Thursday, because sometimes particularly in this, three license arrangement, making sure the words are exactly right might not quite get there. But I think that's only in probably one or two places, and we would be willing to make a note of that in the public comment and continue working through just getting to the right language, but understanding the principles that we're working to expressed through that language and making sure that that was part of what was posted for public comment.
Great. Josh, did you have anything you wanted to add or no? Okay. I'm not seeing you hand or hearing you, Josh. There you go. Go ahead.
I didn't unmute things. No, I think that it's all been, everything's been captured. I mean, there were a few things. I don't know, George and Sam, if you feel like a couple of things are worth discussing here in part so that people understand if they're not fully and finally resolved, that they're comfortable with sort of the process and the fact that these aren't showstopper type issues at this point. So maybe it is worth bringing up if we have some time and letting people hear some of this discussion.
So just one quick reaction to that. I'll turn it back to you, George and Sam. But I think for the sort of the second agenda item, if there's some specific issues that we want to discuss or that you guys want to get feedback from the rest of the group on, I think that would make sense to do. But I did just want to pick up on Sam's point, because I think it's more broadly applicable for all of us, is that, you know, the goal that we're trying to hit is to have this week documents that are stable enough that we feel comfortable putting them out to public comment on Thursday, not that we feel comfortable signing them on Thursday. So they don't have to be perfect, and there can be, you know, open issues where commenters are invited to provide their opinion, and that's totally fine. Obviously, we've all been through this very similar process multiple times in the last couple of years for the transition specifically, and I think in every case that has worked fairly well. So we should really, I think, all of us and within our own communities try to work to get people into that mode of thinking that, you know, these documents, are they good enough to be commented on? Not, you know, are they good enough to sign today? And that also means, I think, some issues that really don't need even to be resolved until signing time, like whose name, or, you know, who the signatory is, and those kinds of things, we can defer. They don't have to be decided this week, which I think is helpful. So perhaps we should move into the discussion of the specific substantive issues. And I know that the lawyers have a few, but we also had the community agreement circulated. So maybe we could just pull that up quickly, the latest version of the community agreement into the Adobe, if you guys don't mind doing that. I can, folks. And just to see if anybody else who has read or looked at the edits has anything that they want to raise. I know I have just one or two small things I wanted to ask about, but the floor is open for other folks who have comments or questions on the community agreement. Greg, go ahead.
Thanks. Greg Shatton, I'm happy to go after you, Alyssa. I just wanted to put my hand up so you wouldn't feel lonely.
No, go ahead. I'll wait.
Okay. A couple of these are, I think these agreements are, the community agreements in very good shape. I'm really pleased with the progress. A couple of things, and these may be nitpicks, but I'm to some extent channeling a couple of comments up from the CWG. I'm also going to come back with some line items, which I think would be non-controversial. I'll mention them, but I don't want to hold the mic for too long. First, in the characterization of the numbers community, or that, say, the definition of the numbers community, I'm wondering why the use of collectively and unanimously. Usually I see collectively as being sufficient in legal drafting. So I'm assuming the unanimously is there for a reason, and curious what that is. I don't know if you want to do Q&A or if you want me to do all the Qs or comments first.
This is George. If I can jump in, I mean, it probably is useful to go question by question, Alyssa, unless you think otherwise, just so we remember.
Yeah, I think that's fine. Yeah, I think so, you and Josh and Sam should feel free to answer these question by question.
Yeah, and so let me jump in, Greg, on that one first, and then Athena may want to, chime in also, because obviously, you know, this structure is proposed by the RIRs. You know, from my standpoint in thinking about the trust, the numbers community is being represented to us in this agreement as a coalition of five other bodies. You know, we, in taking instruction or even advice from whatever that group is, we don't want to be the arbiter of dissent among those five. We need the five to act as a single entity, at least in the interactions with the trust. I mean, you know, our hope originally had been that there would be some kind of entity partnership of some kind that we would just, you know, would be the agreement signing entity, but that I think is not a possibility here. So, you know, second best is to have five signatories for this community, but at least from our standpoint, have them speak with one voice and not have to parse out who actually represents this community if they say different things. But Athena, any insight that you can offer to Greg?
Yes, thank you, George. This is actually, I understand Greg's point, because this unanimously it suggests that the agreement indicates on how the five RIRs will take a decision and then come collectively back to the IETF Trust. However, this is a very standard language we use, and we feel comfortable with that. But if the others don't, we'll be happy to drop it.
I would say I don't feel uncomfortable with it. I just was looking for an explanation. It's helpful to know. I don't know. Athena, do you use the word unanimously when you refer to yourself definitionally as the RIRs, or you just, I mean, I understand the concept of unanimity is just putting it into the definition, which usually doesn't carry any substantive weight in an agreement. It just strikes me as perhaps not as helpful as it would be if it was specified in the kind of substantive portion of the agreement that the voice of the RIRs will need to be unanimous.
This was actually taken from the wording we have used in our SLA. We don't feel strongly about it. We can drop it, no problem.
If you use it in the SLA, that's fine. That's good enough for me. I just wanted to get behind this and also be able to explain this to a particular voice in my community. I hate to start with a nitpick, but sometimes you start with a nitpicker.
Well, Greg, sure. So let me just build on that. This is George again, because I think it's a good point. I mean, I would propose that we leave this definition as it is, because it does have precedent, but it probably is also helpful, as you suggested, somewhere in the agreement to you know, have an operative clause that says the RIRs will speak with one voice. And so that's something that can be added.
Based on Alyssa's test of stable enough for a draft to go out, this meets my test. So I'll move off of this.
It actually raises sort of the parallel question, which was one that was on my list, and sorry for going out of order, but what is the one thing that we were hoping to find out on today's call is what the NAMES community proposes as far as its representation in this agreement. Is there a single entity? Is it a coalition? Any forecast on what we should expect there?
It's going to be a baby's hand holding an apple. More seriously, and for anybody who doesn't listen to the tubes, it's under discussion. There are a couple of, or I guess, there's really only two rational options, and I'm trying to focus discussion on the CWG list on that point, in spite of the desire of some people to drive into the weeds and stay there. So I'm hopeful that by, our next call, we'll have at least a decision on that temporarily. But I expect that whatever it is, it's going to require some further development, because in the tradition of not particularly suitable but hopefully acceptable entities, neither of our choices are perfect. But either could work, but not without some work. So, sorry to be somewhat cryptic, but that's what I've got.
No, thanks.
Yeah. I guess Alan pointed out something in the chat that I was kind of wondering, why not just use the NRO as the entity rather than the five RIRs?
May I respond to that?
Yeah,
please.
Yes, please.
Please.
Yeah.
Yes.
So the NRO is, let's say, an unincorporated body that we use as the voice of the five RIRs, but it's not a legal entity, and we've never signed an agreement as NRO. We've always signed agreement as the five RIRs acting collectively, signing individually. Having said that, we would suggest that instead of the RIR coalition that is mentioned in the definition, we use the NRO instead, because this is an official term that everyone knows and everyone is familiar with, and we feel comfortable with that. Thank you.
Can you just remind us what NRO stands for, or does it stand for anything?
Non-resource
organization. I'll send you the. I'll write it in the chatting room. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Oh, Alan has done that. Okay. Thanks.
Okay. Moving along. In terms of other things, a suggestion that when one of the CCG co-chairs gives notice or under, I think it's 2.3D, to the IETF trust, that they should provide notice of that communication to the other CCG co-chairs. I don't think it needs to go to them in advance, but it would be good for there to be a kind of group awareness of what's going on, unless there are real concerns with that.
So Greg, that is, I mean, first of all, it definitely sounds like a valid thing to want. Are you suggesting that the trust provide that notice, or I would think that's internal governance of the CCG.
I would suggest, yeah, that it be either, noticed to the CCG list by the appropriate co-chair, or by some other method, but not that the IETF would be required to make that, but just basically that the other co-chairs or the rest of the CCG would be CC'd. We can work out the exact function, how it'll work out, but just I think it's important to have kind of transparency in that area.
And so this is George again. You're absolutely right. Absolutely. I mean, one of the things that, this agreement doesn't get to all aspects of internal CCG governance. We can certainly in 2.3C put in the thing that you suggest. That, no objection. But it also, has occurred to me that there probably needs to be some sort of CCG bylaws or something that is not visible, not that the trust is not involved with, but that at least the three CCG members have to order their relationship and their operations. Is that something that should be on somebody's list to be thinking about?
Absolutely. I think we've kind of mentioned that. And at one point, there was a somewhat perhaps unrealistic mention that there would be bylaws or procedures adopted at the first meeting of the CCG. That language was in a prior draft of this. I'm not finding that language in this draft, but.
Oh, I think it's still there.
Okay. Maybe.
Yeah.
I'm speed reading.
Well, so.
I'm not reading. But it should be there. Whether it's there or not, the issue is there.
And so, right. So there's, we can have a reference. Yes, it's 2.4. It's section 2.4.
Yeah.
So we all agree that those should exist. I mean, but I was just trying to, well, I was just asking if we need to operationalize the creation of those in some way.
Now, Ray is suggesting that the CCG would need to be stood up and put into action to work out its own operating procedures rather than to have, say, a drafting team put together to get it ready before the first CCG meeting. I would tend to suggest the latter process. I don't want to bog us down here since we're going through the agreement, but I think we should put a pin in the discussion of how, because I think setting the CCG together without any rules of the road and telling them to kind of make it up at their first play date seems to me perhaps a cart and horse problem.
I tend to agree. This doesn't seem like a must be done before this Thursday item, but it seems like it should be done before during the 30-day comment period, possibly.
Yeah, I think so too. The copious free time we will have should be put to good use.
Okay, let's reserve that one. Well, I will start a list of things to be discussed on the future calls after this week, and that will go on the list.
Yeah. Other than that, I think the comments I have are sufficiently boring that I can put them into a markup of today's version of the agreement in track changes or something like that. So I will take my hand down and my mouth as well.
Thanks, Greg. Go ahead, Athena.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you very much. First of all, thank you very much for the preparation of the draft. Most of our comments have been incorporated. We're very happy for that. So, there was the comments about the NRO, which instead of the RIR coalition, which has been addressed already. Also, about the collectively and unanimously, I think, for consistency purposes, maybe we can use the exact phrase as we used in the SLA, which is the RIRs can only exercise their rights and or powers under this agreement by acting collectively and unanimously. And I can paste this in the chatting room. There it is. So if we can use that, I think it will be for consistency purposes, like more complete. The last point I have is regarding Article 3.2d. That was a comment we had made in the initial draft. The current provision suggests that co-chair representing an operating community shall have the right to instruct the ITF to terminate the license agreement. And our concern is that this way we might create some stability issues because such an instruction, such as a decision, should not be a sole person decision. So instead, we suggested an alternative text according to which the co-chair representing the operational community will notify the IANA Trust, and then the IANA Trust will terminate the license agreement with the current operator. I believe that was an oversight, but if it was not, I would like to know whether that was what was the reason why this was not incorporated. Thank you.
Yes. So Athena, this is George speaking from the trust standpoint. This was an oversight, but I guess I would be curious to hear from Josh, whether that's okay. Josh and Greg and others, whether the names community is okay with that formulation, because it's certainly, as I mentioned before, it's okay from the trust standpoint.
Alyssa, if I may respond.
Yes, please go ahead.
So this is Josh. I think we agree, and it's something that came back in some comments to me over the weekend, in principle, that we ought to make it clear that in the language that the the operational, you know, the CCG representatives of the operational communities don't have the kind of independent ability to make an evaluation and notify the trust that the license should be terminated, but should really be communicating that decision of their relevant communities through their own internal, you know, dispute resolution process. And with respect to the NAMES community, for example, there's a lengthy process in the ICANN bylaws that it goes through SCWG recommendation, which is something that's defined in the bylaws, and then there's a possibility for the empowered community to reject that decision or recommendation. If it doesn't happen, then there is a decision made to transition the IANA services to a different provider. And once that decision's made, it should be communicated for the trust to know that there's a valid authorization. It should be communicated through the CCG representatives of that community. But we agree it shouldn't be something that's read to be an alternative sort of substantive or subjective decision-making body. So we support that kind of change as well.
Okay, thanks. So that is something that is not difficult to reflect. And Athena, apologies for not picking that up in the in this version.
Okay, great. So I just had one question myself, which is about one of the new sentences in 4.4, which is the covenant. And I just want to clarify that I understand this. So there's a new sentence at the end of 4.4, which talks about the parties acknowledging terms that could be appropriate to include if 4.4 gets amended in the future, and those terms relate to future stewardship of the IANA intellectual property. And I wanted to understand the motivation for this a little bit better, because I thought the purpose of this section overall is primarily to put a marker down that says that the trust is going to go seek an amendment to the trust agreement to be able to transfer the IPR under certain circumstances, including like dissolution of the trust. And so I guess what I'm a little, what I don't quite understand is, like, if some of these circumstances include the trust being dissolved, then how can the trust be in a position to apply any principle about to whom the IPR would be transferred, which is what I think this last sentence is sort of hinting at. In the future, we will all try to make sure it gets transferred to another responsible entity or something. But I kind of thought the whole point of this part was that, you know, the trust itself would no longer be involved. And so I realize that this sentence isn't really committing anybody to anything, because it's just about something that could be included in an agreement in the future. But I wanted to understand it a little bit better, because when I read it, it didn't quite make sense to me what this was trying to do.
So this is good. I can say a couple of words about the structure, and then Sam, also turn it over to Sam, who may want to say something about that particular sentence. So listen, the thing to think about is the timeline here. You know, these things are happening in a sequence. So what will happen first is the trust will go to the community, the ITF community, to seek, you know, an amendment of the trust agreement. If that permission is granted by the ITF community, then hand in hand with amending the trust agreement, the trust would negotiate with the operational communities an amendment to this agreement, right, that would say, you know, if one of these bad things happens, you know, we can transfer the IANA IPR out to another suitable repository, right? The bad things are the trust breaches the agreement, or the trust is bankrupt or dissolved or something like that, right? But that's looking into the future. So the amendment is going to happen, you know, soon, say within the next whatever, 6 months, when the trust, you know, is not going to be dissolved, looking towards some other day in the far future when the trust might disappear. So the agreement would happen now, and it would kick in, right? It would be executed when that bad thing happens sometime in the distant future. I mean, I guess there's a situation in theory where the trust could be declared bankrupt tomorrow before this amendment gets agreed, but that's pretty unlikely. I don't think anybody is worried about that. It's kind of the distant future that this is going to address. So the amendment would be in place soon against the future event.
But just to clarify, this sentence, this very last sentence of 4.4, applies only to this agreement. It's not saying anything about the potential amendment to the trust agreement, correct?
It's talking about a potential amendment to this agreement, to the community agreement.
Okay. That was my reading of it as well, so that's good.
Sam, any other, or Alyssa, does that clear it up for you, or would more background be helpful?
Well, that didn't really answer the question. I mean, I understood the timing. It's hard to understand even what this is saying about what is envisioned to go into this agreement. That's all I'm saying. And maybe I'm violating my own rule here because, as written, it doesn't really bind anybody to anything. And so in theory, if it stays in this document and goes out to public comment, I have no problem with it. I was just trying to understand the motivation for it, because it seems like there's circumstances under which it will be effectively meaningless. Like the trust will not, be able, if the trust has gone bankrupt or doesn't exist anymore, it won't be able to uphold some principle about the stewardship of the IPR.
That's
kind of what I don't understand.
But the amendment that we sign 6 months from now will be specific about what happens if the trust goes bankrupt, right? It'll be specific. It'll say if the trust, yeah, I mean, again, the bankruptcy clause is going to be a half a page long, but it'll say something like if the trust, you know, gets into one of these dangerous bankruptcy, you know, paths toward liquidation, that it would, you know, automatically things will happen, right? The trust will assign its assets to a new entity designated by the, you know, by the CCG or the communities or whatever. And, you know, we'll have to be careful to write that provision in such a way that a bankruptcy court will honor it, which involves some work. It's difficult to get bankruptcy courts to enforce these types of agreements, but we would do what we could. But that would happen now. We don't have to wait until the trust is, you know, dissolved for that to happen. Before the trust, you know, is actually gone, it would have to do one last transfer. And somebody's always going to be in control of the asset.
Okay, I think I get it now. Thanks. That was helpful. Greg, go ahead. And then I think we should maybe cut the queue for this and switch over to the technical points from the lawyers.
Thanks. Two quick points. One, without putting too much weight on what the CWG drafted in its version of the community agreement, if you look at some of the things there that the trust can't currently do, that gives an indication of one version of what the trust might be able to do if it amends its rules or its trust agreement. So I think that's kind of the underlying concept here, but again, without putting too much weight on our draft, which is just, you know, an early draft. Second, and completely unrelatedly, I'm wondering whether it makes sense to have the community coordination group names listed in Exhibit B prior to signing. I'm not sure that, you know, maybe we can all get that done before this, but I wouldn't want that to hang us up. And there are a lot of times where there are groups that are not necessarily, you know, stood up on day one. Just something to think about, and maybe it'll be easy for the other two communities. And I put the question to the names or to the CWG about how we're going to do this. And it's also possible we could have someone sit in, essentially, until further selections are made. Thanks.
Great. Let me ask a clarifying question, since George asked about the agreement. And so clearly, I don't think any of us were thinking that Exhibit B would be filled out before Thursday. But is your comment directed to whether this should be filled out at all before the agreement is signed? And are you suggesting maybe getting rid of Exhibit B?
Yes, the latter. I mean, we can see where we get in the next 45 days or 30 days. Just not entirely convinced we need to have the CCG, you know, initial CCG named here. And there may be some hurdles conceivably to doing so.
Okay,
go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I think, you know, we can leave it. It's been in there. We can leave it for now. It's an empty exhibit, so there's no harm in leaving it in for public comment. But I think each of the operational communities should take an action item to consider the time that they will need to make those appointments. We can bookmark this for a future call as well to figure out if people think it's reasonable or not to get it done by the time the agreements need to be signed. And if not, then we can accommodate that.
And I'm seeing numerous people on the chat agreeing that this may be a challenge. If that's the case, if it's easy enough and probably a better thing for us to eliminate Exhibit B before this goes out for public comment, because potentially some of the public comments are going to be suggestions on how to fill out Exhibit B. So if people want to get rid of it, again, I don't see any, you know, compelling reason from an IETF trust standpoint to keep it in.
Okay, well, that's a fair question. If people's instinct right now is that it's going to come out because you don't have time to get the slots filled, then we can take it out. If people object to taking it out, speak up now. Yes, good point, Craig. Okay. So yeah, let's go ahead and take it out and move forward with that plan. Okay, excellent. So let's take 15 minutes to the legal team to go through your other outstanding issues from the other documents that you wanted feedback on. So I can turn the floor to you guys.
So Sam and Josh, I had been asked by my clients to put together sort of a checklist of sort of the technical type of issues that we could use feedback on from the other members of the negotiating team that we just don't have the authority or the expertise to figure out ourselves. Feel free to jump in with others that I'm omitting. The first one on my list is just the definition of the names, the IANA name service in the exhibits. I think it's in the exhibits of both the community and the license agreement. We've got drafts of the protocol parameters and the numbers service definitions, but I guess I would ask the CWG representatives, is that something that we should expect before the public comment period, or just leave it a to be determined, which I think, isn't great when this is out there? Obviously, the public will comment about that.
This is Greg. If I could respond briefly, this is another of the necessary items I highlighted twice now to the CWG. We have a few people that like to drive around in the weeds rather than staying on the road, but I've highlighted it again. Josh has suggested that the naming functions agreement has some language in defining more or less what the IANA naming services are, and that could be modified and pressed into service here. So I'm going to take a look at that and try to move that forward, and I agree this should not be blank on Thursday. Even if it's in brackets, there should be something in the brackets. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so that's in your court. The IANA naming functions agreement, I see the note in the chat. We don't need to worry about that. Greg, I guess that's a question for you or Josh.
I'm not sure why
responding.
Josh was in the chat, what he was responding to, but yeah, it's in our court to get a blurb in time for Wednesday.
Okay, great. Okay, then, you know, there's some kind of nitpicky little things, but the more that we can resolve, the better. So in the license agreement, the license obviously authorizes ICANN and its sublicensees to perform the IANA services defined. And ICANN has suggested adding language at the end of that says, you know, and related services and operations, including root zone and registry management. That sounds plausible to me, but I just wanted to get confirmation from the technical people that is what you anticipate and that's correct. So in addition to running the IANA number service, IANA name service, IANA protocol parameter service, also root zone and registry management.
Greg, I don't know if your hand is still up, or if you wanted to respond to that, or if that's from before. No, looks like not. Ted, go ahead.
I was just going to say, if they intended to do these under the marks being granted here, that would make some sense, but I'm a little bit confused, and maybe Sam can answer this for me. It seems like the domain names, et cetera, being transferred would be different from the domain names that would be used for root zone management, right? Those are the not really typically done under ANA.org in my memory. Am I misremembering that, or is that work currently done under this set of marks and domain names?
So I'm a little bit out of my element on that one, Ted, to know exactly which domain names the work happens under, but just in case. Our concern was just in case there was some crossover, and given how intensively related the work is to the IANA function, that there wasn't going to be a need to specifically parse out some of those things that might be just on the other side of the line from the naming function, but intensively related to the performance of it. So, this was some suggested text that the technical people on the phone have any other ideas of how to express it. We just wanted to make sure that this wasn't any intention to expand the realm of things that I could use the marks for, but really making sure that that world of things that we use it for today that we haven't necessarily had to really particularly parse out is between the different communities itself still remains just, you know, in place and working as things are related to the performance of the function.
So this certainly would not block us from going to public comment, but I would like to think about this language pretty carefully when it's in front of us, because I think that the point you just made is an excellent one, that it could be misread, I think, to expand it and to create yet a different operational community that would need to be consulted for a lot of this. And in order to avoid that, I think we'd want to write this carefully. But As I said, this certainly wouldn't block us from going to public comment. I asked in the chat whether we would have this draft in front of us, and it sounds like George is saying no. But when we see the actual draft, I'll work with Andrew and some others to review that language.
Yeah, and sorry, you know, just there are a lot of different pieces in the draft. There's still a couple of things that are not quite ready for group viewing. So, but I'm pretty sure that today we'll get you something, Ted.
Josh, go ahead.
Thanks, Alyssa. So, can I suggest, just in the interest of trying to be sort of clear on fun things, that it is, we did check, I did check and then check before, George, for service agreement for the names community, it can be the IANA naming functions agreement, which does have exhibits that include SLAs and the like, and is the principal document governing the IANA services. So we can put that in. We know the names community name, EOC representative there is to be determined still, and suggest we make that clear, just in TBD in brackets. And the language about, you know, including root zone registry and registry management, in general, I think that is part of what's included in the naming functions agreement and services that are provided there, so that may be sufficient. And I'd suggest we not call it out, at least in the draft that's going out for public comment, which is probably more, if we call it out without much more definition, it's probably going to raise more questions than it helps solve. So I'd suggest we take out that kind of specific reference to something that's outside the specified agreements with the various operational communities. And I'm done.
Thank you. That sounds reasonable to me, but I haven't seen it. I haven't seen the actual language, so.
Well,
George, back to you.
Yeah, I'm sorry. So Sam, so ICANN, that language was proposed by ICANN. What would ICANN's reaction be to deleting that text about the root zone and registry management?
I don't think we would have a problem for deleting that for public comment. We might, if we have any sort of cover document or you know, discussion as we're posting for public comment, we might want to include in there a question or just a point of review for people to make sure that it doesn't preclude ICANN from performing the inherently related services under the mark, even if it's not specifically called out.
So that seems reasonable to me, and Alyssa, it actually raises a point that we haven't gotten to yet, which is presumably a cover note needs to be crafted for this public review period, and it's presumably going to say more than, you know, please see attached for review. Seems like all of the different groups on this call probably want some input into that cover note, and probably a drafting process should begin. Just, you know, just taking to heart what Sam has just said, there are some specific points that probably need to be in it.
Yeah, I was hoping to have a few minutes at the end of the call today to chat a little bit about that. So let's just hold that for a few more minutes, assuming you guys still have a few other things that you wanted to discuss, or was that the end of your list?
Just quick, a couple of quick ones. Okay. We have been wrestling with and currently just have some placeholders for this concept that when one of the three license agreements is terminated, meaning one set of the services potentially goes to another service provider who's not ICANN, how do we deal with the subdomains, you know, under IANA.org? And is there, you know, we or I have proposed language that, you know, says ICANN would cooperate with the community to allow the new service provider to to operate under those subdomains at no additional charge. And there's a question from ICANN, quite appropriately, about maybe there will be charges, and who will pay for that. So any insight from our technical teams on how you would see this potentially working?
Josh, go ahead. You still, is that a new hand? Okay, Andrew, go ahead.
Thanks. So, like, I have a pretty good idea of how this ought to work, having, you know, done some registry operations before. But without sort of having the language in front of me, it's very difficult to comment on.
Fair enough. Okay, so perhaps we can do some email exchanges on this later, you know, once you get the agreements in front of you. That's fine.
That'd be great.
I don't really have any more technical questions. And I do think Andrew raises a good point. If people on the call will commit to take a look at the comments and questions, you know, in the next draft and respond by email, we can probably get them done that way.
Okay. Great. Thanks for leading us through that. So it sounds like we're all making really good progress here. I think the expectation is, obviously we already have the community agreement, so anything that people didn't raise on the call today, please share with the list if you have further edits or suggestions there, and then we'll be getting the other agreements hopefully today, and people should send their feedback on those before Wednesday with the goal of, on the Wednesday call, of achieving stable drafts that everyone feels comfortable going to public comment with. I understand that there are the sort of Thursday process is that there's a CWG call on Thursday and a trust call on Thursday, and that there's ongoing discussions, you know, in all the communities about these documents, but my hope is that we as this group are feeling comfortable that our timeline is on track for Thursday, and we should be planning for that. And if anyone doesn't feel that way, or thinks that there's a possibility that we won't be ready to go to comment on Thursday, then please put yourself in the queue immediately. But that notwithstanding, I think Andrew has volunteered to start drafting a cover note to accompany the public comment period, and I will work together with him on that, assuming people are comfortable with having that posted to the ICG site and having the ICG site be the sort of single place where everyone else points to as the home of the public comments. We have received support from the ICG to do that. No objections whatsoever. Everyone is in the ICG is happy for us to do that, as long as we make it clear that this is not actually the work of the ICG, but is an independent process. And we have the technical support prepared. Echo happening. We have Jennifer here from the Secretariat, and the Secretariat is prepared to support that in the usual way. So, public notice on the website, all the documents will be posted. There will be an email alias to which comments can be sent. The Secretariat will provide autoresponder so that people get a confirmation that their comment is being processed, and we will do moderation of that alias to make sure that we don't get a bunch of spam posted to the archive, and then the archive will be made public on the site as well. So that's basically the rough plan. It's the same as the public comment processes that have come before. It's actually a little less elaborate than what we did for the ICG before, but hopefully we won't get 157 comments like we did for that. So I see Greg is in the queue. Would like to hear from people if everyone is comfortable with that plan, and then we can also bookmark a little bit of time on Wednesday to make sure people are comfortable with the cover note that we have, that we will have drafted by then. Greg, go ahead.
Thanks, Greg Shatton, for the record. I'm generally comfortable with that plan, and I thank the ICG and Secretariat for providing that support. Glad my Solomonic suggestion had some takers, and that no babies needed to be harmed in order to come to that decision. Secondly, I would suggest that ICANN has a fairly stable and iterative approach to having a cover page on its comment period, and that should at least be looked at as a input in terms of style, and to some extent, where there have been prior comments relating to documentation for the transition, might be able to provide some substance as well. Have not gone and looked at any of them specifically, but just think that might provide, you know, some worthwhile help to the process. Thanks.
Thank you, Greg. Any other comments on the process for public comment? Okay. So the other issue just raised in the chat by Josh is the suggestion that we extend Wednesday's call to 2 hours in case we need it, which I am happy to do. I don't have the doodle in front of me. I imagine that we will, because this was a tough spot, we might lose one or two people in the second hour. But is there anyone who objects to extending Wednesday's call to 2 hours in case we need the time?
This is Greg. There's a working group call at the time of the second hour, the Rights Protection Mechanism Working Group. That may affect only me. But if it's possible to extend earlier rather than later, I would appreciate that. You know, if not, you know, I'll skip the RPM call.
Okay. I'm just bringing up the doodle for a second to see what this looks like. Sorry, that's too many doodles. So to me, it looks like people had similar, we might lose, actually, it looks like everyone else is available. Oh, no, I'm sorry. I'm just looking at the wrong thing. It does look like we would lose quite a number of people in the hour prior as opposed to the hour afterward.
Since I'm only one among many in that working group and others can carry the ball, let's just extend into the second hour rather than making a prequel. Thanks.
Okay, thanks. So if the Natalie and Brenda, if you could take an action to change the invite for Wednesday to a two-hour call from adding on a second hour. So we would go, I think, from 1600 to 1800. That would be great. Anything else before we drop? I know we already are over time. Okay. See people typing into the chat. All right. Great. Thanks, everyone. Thanks for all your hard work over the weekend, and we'll be in touch on email. See you on the call on Wednesday.
Thank you all. Thank you, Alyssa, for chairing.